ready to go? You guys all set to go? Red is on?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I was off. I was off, okay. All right. I call this meeting of the State Lands Commission to order. He had this thing for a whole year. Wouldn't let me touch it. All the representatives of the commission are present. My name is Alan Gordon, representing State Controller John Chung. I'm joined today by Chris Garland on behalf of Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. To my right and to my left is Irina Ortega, representing the Department of Finance. The first item of business will be the adoption of the minutes from the commission's regular meeting of December 2nd, 2013. May I have a motion to approve the minutes, please?
Actually, may I just jump in real
sure,
quick?
Jennifer.
Because the two constitutional officers are represented by alternates. Only one may vote on the minutes and then the rest of the agenda as well.
I'll move the minutes.
Great.
I'll second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are unanimously adopted. Next order of business, the executive officer's report. Ms. Lucchese, may we please have that report?
Yeah, I just have two announcements. I want to acknowledge the retirement of Gary Gregory, chief of our Marine Facilities Division. This is actually his re-retirement. Gary is really the father of the commission's Marine Facilities Division and the commission's oil spill prevention program. On September 24, 1990, the Lemperkine Sea Strand Oil Spill Prevention and Response Act passed, which established the Marine Facilities Division in the commission. On November 1, 1990, Gary retired from the U.S. Coast Guard as a full commander and became the first chief of the Marine Facilities Division. During his 20 plus years as division chief, Gary also acted as assistant executive officer of the commission and also interim administrator of OSPR. During both the Deepwater Horizon and the Enbridge pipeline spill, which was in Michigan, Gary was asked to be a member of the response teams. He spent several weeks at each of these spills lending his expertise to the incident command. Gary first retired from state service in December of 2010. In 2012, Gary returned to the Marine Facilities Division to once again take the reins as division chief to help us out through certain transitions. Gary retired for real from state service on December 31st, 2013. He will be greatly missed by his colleagues at the Commission, the Coast Guard, and throughout the trade and shipping industry. We wish him the very best in retirement with his family in Henderson, Nevada. While we are sad to say goodbye to Gary, I am very excited to announce the appointment of our new chief for the Marine Facilities Division, Laura Covery. Laura served as assistant chief for the division for most of 2013. Prior to entering state public service, Laura was an officer on board ocean-going vessels for 17 years for various companies, including BP Shipping. Laura has a bachelor's degree in nautical industrial technology and a master's in maritime management. I'm confident that Laura will experience much success leading our Marine Facilities Division and support the Commission's missions and goals relating to oil spill prevention. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Next order of business will be the adoption of the consent calendar. Anyone in the audience who wishes to speak on any item on the consent calendar? If not, the group of consent items C01 to C04 will be taken up as a group for a single vote. Now proceed with the vote. May I have a motion, please?
I'll move the consent calendar.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The consent calendar is adopted. Next order of business will be the regular calendar. Item 05 is to consider proposed amendments to three sections of the California Code of Regulations pertaining to the Commission's surface leasing program. May we have the staff presentation, please?
Colin Connor, our Assistant Chief of our Land Management Division, will be presenting this item.
There we go. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Colin Connor. I'm the Assistant Chief of the Land Management Division. Thank you for having this special meeting. Appreciate it. I'm here to present the staff report on calendar item 5, which is the proposed adoption of the amendments to the Commission's surface leasing regulations. As you will recall, the Commission considered adoption of the proposed amendments to the regulations at its December 2nd Commission meeting. At the meeting, staff identified four main areas of concern as expressed in the public comments and how staff proposed addressing them. And let me grab this here. These are the proposed amendments that we considered at the December 2nd commission meeting. And these are the four main areas of concern. Definition of sovereign lands, the annual administrative fee, the appraised value of the leased land, and the impact area. In the definition of sovereign lands, what was changed was the reference to, it was originally the mean high tide line, and we changed it to the ordinary high water mark, and we deleted the reference to the public trust. The annual administrative fee we restricted to certain categories of leases so as not to be onerous to the general public and the majority of the general public recreational leases. The appraised value of the leased land was simply a change back to the way the original language was in the existing regulations. The impact area is the area that garnered the most interest from the public comments, including the public comments at the December 2nd commission meeting. Basically, go forward here. The impact area, this is the language that we were originally proposing, and the public comments had a number of concerns about this, and at the December 2nd commission meeting, after hearing that, the commissioners deferred voting, considering or making a determination on the regulations until this had been resolved. They basically directed staff to go back and address limiting the impact area to those areas that were actually used or that restricted public access and address the seasonality issues. We went back and we had conversations with some of the stakeholders, specifically the Tahoe Lakefront Owners Association, and we addressed, we believe we addressed their concerns with this modification. One of the key things, moving away from the microphone, is we took out the deterrent effect and we added this language in the red. And this was the language that was discussed at the December 2nd commission meeting. Primarily, I would draw attention to the last sentence. The commission may consider the seasonal use and other local conditions when establishing the impact area and rent for that impact area. So we've done that, and again, we've had conversations with Tahoe Lakefront Owners Association, and we believe that they're okay with this. We've actually worked out to some extent how this would be implemented at Lake Tahoe. So at this point, we believe that the first three items that were identified in the December 2nd commission meeting are okay, and we've addressed the last item, the impact area. I would conclude by saying that staff is available to answer any of your questions. I believe that Jan Briscoe from Tahoe Lakefront Owners Association is also here. So any questions you may have.
And if I may just add on to the presentation and talk about that last sentence and specifically how that particular regulation will be implemented at Lake Tahoe under the local conditions category. After receiving additional information about boating activities up at Tahoe and the use of boats and that sort of thing, we have come to a conclusion as staff that as we move forward in implementing these regs, should the commission adopt them, we will be implementing them at Lake Tahoe, where the impact area width will be 9 feet. The seasonal use at Lake Tahoe is 4 months, which basically equates to a 67% reduction in rent for the impact area. Those conclusions by staff were the result of many discussions with Lake Tahoe representatives from the LTOA, including consideration of the additional documentation information that they provided. We think this is reasonable. Staff thinks this is supportable, and that's how staff intends to implement these regulations on a go-forward basis on individual leases and their recommendations as they come before the commission. The other thing I just want to highlight is that there will be many folks that received commission authorization for a lease last December and before that, and they will likely want to consider whether to come back to the commission for basically a recalculation of their rent based on the new practices going forward should the commission adopt these regulations. Staff has thought about that very hard, and we have come up with a plan to address that, and that includes that if the individual lessee would like a reconsideration of the rent, they can apply for an amendment to their lease. We typically charge $1,500. We believe that we can go through the process for $1,000. And that, of course, if we don't actually spend that in staff costs, we will refund any money that's left over. But I will want to highlight that this is a business decision that each individual lessee will have to make, because pursuant to our lease, general lease terms, at the 5-year mark of the 10-year lease term, there is a rent review that occurs by staff on staff's own dime. So the choice that the lessee has to make is it better to submit an application today for and pay the $1,000 processing fee, or is it better to wait from a business decision until the 5-year rent review, where we will recalculate the rent pursuant to the regulations should they be adopted and go forward from there. But we think that there is a cost savings that we can provide any applicant at $1,000 if they apply solely to amend their lease for a recalculation of rent.
Any comments by the commissioners? Yes, Mr. Garland? Okay, we're gonna go to public comment then. Ms. Briscoe, why don't you start and then we will go through in order of the comments as received.
Good morning, commissioners, staff. Jan Briscoe for the Tahoe Lakefront Owners Association. It's been a very interesting year in retrospective review. We have worked out compromise for the language of the regulations and as they will be applied to Lake Tahoe, which I find is unprecedented in many of the agencies with whom we work. We credit Jennifer and her staff for stepping forward and stepping up to the plate on this based on the commission's last action and direction. We have further had conversations about the regulations as they were related to the impact area, that additional language where it says, and any area where the public's access or use is being impacted. Staff has assured us that they don't find any of those situations at Lake Tahoe right now. Maybe Jennifer can expound on that briefly, but we find that this at least gives us a working framework. We will obviously keep that line of communication open and working on specific issues as they arise, but we are here to say that we can support the compromise at this point. Thank you very much. Fantastic. Any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Briscoe. Mr. George Clyde.
While we're waiting for Mr. Clyde to come to the podium, I just wanted to quickly address what Jan had mentioned. And as part of the changes to the regulations language, there is a phrase that where if the facilities clearly prohibit public access or use. At this point in time, staff is not aware of any facilities in Lake Tahoe that that would meet that criteria.
Ms. Lucchese, are there places around the state where you have come across that situation?
The one that comes to mind is Huntington Harbor.
And that is where?
Southern California.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Sorry. Good morning, commissioners and Executive Officer Lucchese and Mr. Connor and staff. My name is George Clyde. I'm with the East Shore Planning Group, which is a group of about 90 property owners on the east shore of Tamales Bay in Marin County. If you know Nick's Cove Restaurant, that's our territory. Many of our homes are on stilts over the tidelands of Tamales Bay. Some other homes on Tamales Bay are in the Inverness area, including the properties that gave rise to the Marks v. Whitney case. A few of our homes have piers that extend beyond their property lines onto public property, and those have leases. Some have piers that extend into submerged lands, and those have leases. However, most of our properties are within the tidelands between the low water mark and the high water mark. We all have good title, going back to patents of the 19th century. This is my deed. This is my title insurance policy. We are sitting there very happily, and we happen to come across the regulations that you're proposing. And this is the problem. It's Section 1900, in the definition of sovereign lands, which is a definition which is considered a term of art for purposes of leasing. It states very specifically that the state's sovereign ownership extends landward to the ordinary high water mark. That's our property. There are two exceptions to that, one for fill and accretions and another for agreements with state lands, but they don't apply. So what this regulation says is that the state owns our properties, which isn't true because of the patents. The properties have been conveyed to us many, many years ago. This, as I say, just came to our attention there as potential lessees. We weren't aware of this until it happened that one of our members was on the agenda in December. So it is it's simply untrue that the state sovereign state fee ownership covers our properties. We appreciate the fact that all of our properties are subject to the public trust doctrine. That's another matter entirely. But as far as whether the State Lands Commission could require leasing or any other property rights with respect to what happens on those tidelands, they can't. They're ours and not the state of California. So the question is, at this late date in your process, with no desire, I'm sure, to make corrections at this point that would impair the process from going forward, what to do? We would ask the commissioners to inquire of staff as to whether they see these concerns that have been expressed, and you have a copy of them in your packet. And I have color version if you'd be interested. It actually shows the homes a little better. But I would ask the commissioners ask staff as to whether they view this as a legitimate concern and what their intentions would be about addressing it in the future so that it's clarified or corrected. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Clyde raises some very good points. Just to give some context about Tamales Bay, the state owns the submerged lands. Mr. Clyde is absolutely correct that that the upland private property owners own the fee interest in the tidelands from the ordinary high water mark to the ordinary low water mark. The state holds a public trust easement over those fee-owned ownerships. The state, I think, in its the State Lands Commission in its 75 years has only exercised the easement and leased that easement interest one time in Morro Bay, and that was to protect the bay and lease it to Fish and Game for habitat and preservation purposes. The State Lands Commission staff and the commission, as far as I've been with the commission, has no intention to lease the public trust easement interest that the state holds, whether it's in Tamales Bay or Lake Tahoe or other places. And in terms of the definition of sovereign lands, you know, as I mentioned, Mr. Clyde raises a very good point. I do want to point to the last part of that definition that talks about court orders. And court orders in Tamales Bay, he mentioned the Marks versus Whitney case, have confirmed fee ownership in those upland private property owners. But regardless, I can appreciate the fact that this may cause some consternation among upland property owners and their title to those tideland patents. And so we will continually look to improve these regulations as we move forward. It's been 20 years, I think, since we last updated these land management regulations. That will not happen again. We are devoted to continuously reviewing and improving these regulations to make it as clear and transparent as possible for the public. So this is on our to-do list to reevaluate that definition in the next go-around for updating the land management regulations.
Let me just be sure I'm clear on the issue here. So the issue is the definition that essentially says it's the delta between the low water mark and the high water mark. And our existing regulations say we have fee interest up to the high water mark. Actual law says we would go. Give me the difference between the two.
The definition and the regulations say we have fee ownership up to the ordinary high water mark, except for where there's been fill or artificial accretion, or there's been an agreement between the state, the commission, and the upland private homeowner that fixes the boundary and title, or there's been a court order, a court decision that basically confirms title under different circumstances. And so we believe that covers the situation of a tideland patent, a valid tideland patent that conveyed the fee ownership to a private individual. But I, again, I can appreciate the fact that there might be some differing opinions about that. So we are going to continuously look to how to improve that definition without including every single exception that there is to state ownership. We're talking about tidelands, submerged lands, water boundaries. This is a very complex area of the law, and so we want to make sure that any changes that we do make don't have unintended consequences. And I think that's the very point that Mr. Clyde is trying to make with this language. So, like I said, we are going to continually look at this to improve it, to make it more clear and transparent.
Mr. Clyde, thanks for coming before us today and raising this issue. We appreciate it. All right. Mr. Evan, Anthony Evan.
I won't put you through the agony of watching me read something as I did before. You were very patient. I want you to know that, Mr. Gordon. That was great. I have three main points to cover this morning, and one of which is I understand that there has been the discussion, and I'd like to oppose that, the discussion with regard to paying a $1,000 fee to have the leases that have already been signed as they're being amended to reflect the new rent based upon the use area. We paid $1,700 to have the lease drafted when it was drafted. And it was drafted kind of the cart before the horse, so to speak, or otherwise we wouldn't be revisiting it. So I would ask that those of us that have paid a substantial fee to you for administrative fees, that we shouldn't have to pay another $1,000 or anything. And the other thing that I also ask staff, if you would, to also let us know what the rent reduction is. That's a pretty easy thing to do, to take a 30-foot pier easement at the end of our pier and do something. I'm just talking about different situations are going to represent different amounts. If we are going to be charged some sort of a fee, at least let us know in advance how much the rent's going to be reduced, because if you have a short pier, probably not worth it to spend the $1,000, do you see? So that's the one thing. The other thing I did want to bring up is that we really have not, in terms of commissioners giving direction to staff, the issue with regard to the impact or now use area around the buoys. The buoy is radius is 25 feet, but the use of the pier or of the boat at the end of the buoy is stationary. The rest of the 99% of that radius is available to the public just as it is in the impact area or previous impact area under the pier, other than the use area. So the use area is flawed with regard to that.
Mr. Evan, let me just cut you off for a second. My understanding of the regs is that it's a flat fee for the buoy of $375 that really doesn't have anything to do with the use area with the buoy. It's just
If that's, I know that was part of the discussion in terms of input from staff to the commissioners at the last meeting. But there was a calculation that came to $377 that was based upon an impact area of 25 feet and a radius of 25 feet.
I think we can probably put you at ease on this one. Tell me if I'm wrong. It's a straight $377 fee per buoy. It has nothing to do with what the area is around the buoy. It's a straight fee.
If I may address that then, and strongly on behalf of our homeowners association and everyone that we've talked to, we were paying $35 to $50. Mm-hmm. Now we're paying $377. It is absolutely astounding. That's 1,000% increase. Please, if there's going to be a flat fee, and that's an understandable thing to do, we've recommended a flat fee in our correspondence with you as recently as January 5th. So can we say, you know, $75, $100, $377 per buoy is a hardship. And I mean, I can tell you my neighbors, they can't do that. And I'm asking if there would be some direction from the commissioners to not go 1,000% increase in a buoy fee to something that's more reasonable and easier to, not easier to administrate, because if we've come to that 377 or whatever it is, but I mean, $100 is something that's reasonable, but I honestly, $740 for two buoys is...
Sir, I'm going to have staff respond to where they came up with the 377. And
as you'll recall, in 2012, we went through the Lake Tahoe benchmark. We actually had two commission meetings that discussed the methodology of this. A number of points were raised during that, and one of them was the genesis of the Lake Tahoe benchmark and how the calculation was arrived at. The Lake Tahoe benchmark is basically adjusted by the percentage increase over the prior benchmark for buoys, okay? Not piers. I'm not talking about piers. Yep. Originally, the Lake Tahoe benchmark looks like it started in the mid-80s at $50, which is a kind of a standard buoy fee. And then as we updated it, if it was a five-year, and the benchmark was updated, unfortunately, at irregular intervals. But those intervals represented a survey of the buoys at Lake Tahoe. And if our rate was $50, but the survey indicated that from 1985 to 1987 that the market went up 25%, we adjusted the $50 by 25%. And we've continued to do that. The 377 literally represents the increase in the market for buoys at Lake Tahoe. However, it is not parallel to that. And I want to point this out. At Lake Tahoe, buoys, if you were to rent a buoy at a marina, it's anywhere from $1,500 to over $5,000. To say that $377 creates a hardship, I don't even know how to respond to that. So,
Either of the other commissioners have any comments on the three? I mean, from the perspective of the controller, $377 seems a reasonable fee for a year buoy on state property. It's $31 a month, which does not appear to me to be a hardship. I'm waiting to hear if other of my colleagues have any comment.
We've been through this now for the better part of 2 years, and I think we've heard testimony, and I think staff has done a fantastic job of getting us to this point. And I don't think now is the time to revisit the buoy issue. I think it's a reasonable outcome, and while I appreciate Mr. Evans's comments, I don't see any reason to revisit that at this time.
Let me go actually back to your first point, Mr. Evans. The $1,000 charge to revisit to review the leases that were signed under regulations that we are now amending, as I understand it. So how many parties are we talking about here that signed their leases under the regs that we are now changing?
That's very hard to calculate because it could go back many, many years. Okay. So in just for an example, in December, I believe that there was maybe 25 to 30 items for Lake Tahoe.
Okay. The issue that Mr. Evans raises that has resonance for our office is the fact that he has recently paid $1,700 to sign a lease, and now we want to charge him another $1,000 if that lease is, if they determine that they want to do that prior to the five-year review. That causes me some concern. I don't know whether either of my colleagues feel the same way.
I agree. I have that. I wrote a note to come back to this issue. I have the same concern.
Okay, yeah.
And so maybe there's some way of thinking about this in terms of who's most recently signed. And I don't know. I think this question of it being hard to know how many there are, I think it would be really helpful to know how many there are in terms of what the demands on staff would be if you were to go through them all. And
yeah, so that's what's very hard, because it's hard to calculate what the demand is without actually knowing having people call us and say this is what, Mr. Evans also talked about understanding more what they would be charged under the new construct of the regulations, and that's something we can easily do. It just takes a phone call to our staff. We can pull the file, run the numbers, and give that information to the lessee so that they can start making that decision. We operate in generally a reimbursable type of environment, so our staff costs need to be recovered for processing these types of applications. We can continue to think about whether there is an opportunity for the even further reduction of staff costs in processing the amendments to those leases. There is it's not just running the calculation and plugging it in and printing out a new lease with that new number. We have to go through any kind. It would be an amendment to the lease, which would take the action of the commission, and you have to go through the various processes to do that, including CEQA review. And I'm not saying that includes hours and hours. Typically, these leases, 99.9% of them are covered under an exemption, but that's still a process that we have to go through to comply with the law. So I guess what I would say is we can go back as staff to think about, is there an equitable way based on the period of time in which these people, the applicants have come to the commission, gotten approval, and were issued a lease versus the change in the regulations. But I will also say that we don't believe it's going to cost any more than $1,000, and it could cost substantially less, and we don't pocket that money we don't use in processing. We refund that to the applicant. And so we will know better how that actually plays out in terms of how many hours of staff costs there are for processing these types of amendments.
I have a
Mr. Garland?
Slightly different take on this, and I guess I have a question first. The regulations we're adopting do not just affect Lake Tahoe.
That's correct.
So we would be opening a door for revisiting leases, all of our leases, that are affected by these regulations.
That's correct.
I would be comfortable with, with staff giving us the assurance that they will do this in the most economical way possible to help the folks who do wish to amend their lease, but I think the $1,000 fee is actually reasonable.
And may I offer too, is you have my assurances that staff will not be padding the books. We'll be processing these requests with the utmost efficiency and effectiveness. And we will know very clearly how much that will cost come our February meeting. And I can report to the commission about the actual costs on that. And then we can, depending on what those are, come up with other alternatives if the case leads us to that.
Here are the two issues that concern me on this. Number one is the time horizon. If someone has come under lease in the last, and I don't know what the right time is, 1 year, 2 years, where the information is going to be pretty current, seems to me it should be the review might be different and less costly than if it was 7 or 8 years ago. The second would be how much they paid in that recent time. As in Mr. Evans' case, if he recently paid $1,700 for a review, and he would have significant savings now, it seems to me that should be very different than someone who came under review in 2005 and paid a couple hundred dollars for the review. And I would like to see us in maybe a more formal manner take care of that issue. I'm trying to picture folks in the public, and as we found with this, as the word has gotten out about the new rates and everything, the interest has increased, and to come into someone who says, in 2010 we paid $1,700 and now it's another $1,000, I have worries about how that's going to go down in the public and whether we will be, that's totally justified.
Can I just point something out here? In the scenario you just mentioned, those people would be up for a review in less than a year. That would be at our cost. This, remember, it's a, we're talking about a 10-year lease and a 5-year review period.
Yeah.
So the folks who are affected by what we're discussing here are folks who would have signed a lease in the last 5 years who are running up to that timeline of the review that would cost. It would be at our cost. So I just keep that in mind as we discuss it.
All right. Mr. Evans, you had a third point. You can respond to what we this conversation and then you have
I am issue. And I want to I meant to start out by thanking staff and the commissioners for all the time that you've given to this and for the new regulations as they are currently drafted. I think there have been some wonderful things that you've done, and we've all benefited. You may not be able to even make a comment about $377, and you may feel, Commissioner, that it's fair. It is. It's based upon market conditions in commercial areas around Lake Tahoe. There are thousands and thousands of us out there that don't have the ability, specifically in our lease, to generate revenue from our buoys. And we put the buoys in, we maintain them, we do everything, and we've got a little block down there in a chain. And if you understand how silly it is to us in terms of the other perspective about a benchmark that was based upon commercial leases and the appreciation of those leases. I understand that in Newport Beach or at Lake Tahoe in a commercial venture, sure. You know why? Those people bring their boats up, put them on for a summer, and they've got a lot of money and a big boat. We have dinghies out there, and a lot of our buoys have nothing on them whatsoever at all during the summer. My neighbor to the left is two buoys, nothing on them. My neighbor to the right, two buoys that never put anything on them for the last 3 years. So understand you have a block and a chain and a little buoy, and $377 is outrageous. Last point, but thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, sir.
If you're not using the buoy, you could remove it, right?
That's correct. If the lessees always have the option, yeah. If they don't want to enter into a lease with the commission, pay the rent, they can remove their buoys.
Before we leave the $1,000 issue, I would like to talk more about this at the next meeting, because I think that for a limited number of folks, there is a real equity issue of having to pay the money or else pay the higher fee for nearly 5 years. So I would like to talk a little. I don't know that much about this, so I would like to talk a little more about that.
Of course.
Carol Evans.
Thank you, Commissioners. I was not planning on speaking this morning, but on the way down, I received an email from our neighbor, and she asked if I would please read a statement for her. And so I hope I can read it off of my iPhone. The print is a little small. I think you'll all remember at the last December meeting, Kathleen Stevens, who had a very moving statement about her grandparents and so forth. And I thought she was very effective. Well, that is my neighbor. So this is what Kathleen sent to me this morning to please present to you. Hi, my name is Kathleen Stevens, and I am 66 years old, and I want to tell you my Tahoe story. A few years before I was born, my grandmother and grandfather, now she has in parentheses, this is the time when I'm supposed to start to cry, like she did, as you recall from her testimony in December, bought a little piece of property on a relatively unknown lake called Tahoe. The dream property was where they camped each summer. Wait a minute, you all know my story already. I just hope you have not forgotten that not all Tahoe lakefront owners are as wealthy as Bill Gates. After my talk at the last meeting, the staff mentioned that wealth does not make a difference in determining the rental income from our piers and buoys, that a school teacher and a billionaire have to be charged the same rent to make it fair. But it would only be fair if the rents are kept to a reasonable rate that the poorest pier and buoy owner could pay. My next door neighbor, whose family cabin was built before mine, can barely make ends meet in this tough economy. He can't take one day off work to even drive to a meeting like this. He told me he would have to take his boat, and it's not a luxury yacht, off the lake if any more buoy fees were imposed. There's simply no room in his budget for a high rent fee. Please consider him when you calculate the fee. So I just wanted to present that on behalf of Kathleen, my neighbor. And also, just relative to the discussion we were just having about the administrative fee to amend the lease, our lease was just completed in 2012, so it was not very long ago. And I would suggest that the look back period, at least for Lake Tahoe piers, be when the law changed. Prior to SB 525, there were rent free piers. So it seems to me it'd be a very limited number that have been amended since that time. Ours was a new lease, and so we fell under the new impact fees. But I think it would be a relatively small look back period for Lake Tahoe.
Thank you, Ms. Evans. Michael Hooper.
I'd also I'd also like to thank the commission for giving us the opportunity. One thing I'd like to ask is a little bit of a recognition that I had asked for the email notification of these changes and modifications. It was discussed by the commission. I received my notice from the for today's meeting with the changes that are in yellow highlight the day after the close of the public comment period. It was emailed out on the 9th, and the close of the comment period was the 8th. So to some extent, I'm giving you in person what I'd preferred to have put in writing. But I think that there's an element of discussion that was given at the last meeting that part of the issue here that I can see is that the that this whole process is somewhat unknown to a number of the landowners, or they call it the impacted folks. I guess Tomales Bay would be case in point, okay? I think that that's being ignored, and I think it's a bigger deal than just the Lake Tahoe group, which has been fairly represented by the association. As I sit here right now, I still have no idea what my fee is. I understand it's 9 feet instead of the 10 feet. I don't know if it's going from the low water mark, where the low water mark is, how it affects the pier that I have. We have it's a family situation where, you know, right now we've been in this property now for about 22 years, and the taxes and the fees right now exceed what the amortization schedule would be for the purchase of the property 22 years ago. So, I mean, these are the property taxes are higher because we have a pier. The property taxes are higher because we have a buoy. We had to pay extra for the house because it has these improvements. So, in a sense, we're being taxed twice, or taxed plus fee, however you want to view it. But at this point, I still do not understand and do not know what the, you know, I have a 200-foot pier that probably by the end of the summer will be ankle-deep in water at the end of it, okay? And the reason it's 200 feet is to offset the low water situations as it at best. But, you know, that's an issue. We do have a buoy that is used. We don't use it primarily because we use a hoist. So the boat is lowered into the water, got on and left. And so we leave when we come back in that particular boat. It is hoisted out of the water. There's no even though the pier may be 200 feet long, it's only the area where we use the hoist that is used. The rest of it is not usable because of a couple of reasons. One is the water is exposed. The wave action will tear up the pier if you tie a boat up to it. So again, we use the hoist. So, you know, having the circumference of the pier to have an additional fee is something that is, you know, we have no use for that particular area that is being referred to as a use impact area. Finally, with regard to the buoys, even though we are paying taxes on it, I will point out that one of the market values, let me rephrase that, the market strength in the last several years has been imposed, not necessarily by this commission, but by the state of California, with regard to the requirement of inspections. I mean, I go up to launch a little fishing boat, I can't do it until the chains are down at the local marina, or go down to one of the boat commercial facilities and have them launch it, and then pay the fee for the, you know, when I bring it back out to have it, you know, resealed. That's a factor that is creating a huge amount of demand on these buoys, and it's being overlooked. That's part of the reason why the buoys are more valuable today than they were then. We have a friend that used to bring his boat up, launch it, go skiing, come out in the morning, and by noon it's on the trailer in front of the house. Can't do that anymore. Have to pay for the. And I don't know if the commission is aware of the particulars of what I'm referring to, but when the boat comes out of the water in Tahoe, it has to be inspected. It has to be sealed to assure that it's not launched in another area.
This is regard to quagga mussels and things like that.
That's correct.
You're talking about the inspections for invasive species, which are increasing the value of everybody on the lake.
I'm not arguing the benefit of the inspections. Believe me, I've seen them down in Emerald Bay as example, and it's costs a lot of money to abate it. But the fact of the matter is that there have been some imposed procedures that is causing this value of the buoys to be. People want to keep their boat on a buoy rather than back and forth every day. And that's an issue that I think is being ignored. And I still would really appreciate getting an understanding of if I have a low water mark, what is the square footage fee for my property?
Sir, I think the one thing, one of the major changes that were that was made in response to the December meeting is that you will be charged only for the impact area where the boat could be launched. The previous, where you would essentially have a perimeter around the pier, is no longer in effect. The way the new regs read, where the cleats would be, where that hoist would be, and an average size of the boat, that's where they came. They went, you know, started at 10. Folks argued for 7.5 or 8, came up with 9. So where the specific location where you are capable of launching the boat would be the only impact area you would be charged, which does seem to be fair and has been agreed to by a majority of the people who've been involved from the affected community.
I do understand that. Okay, let's just measure that in square feet.
And
okay,
may I?
How much is it per square foot or what have you?
It's the benchmark for Lake Tahoe at this time is 79 cents per square foot. And I would just encourage you, our land manager for the Lake Tahoe area is Nanette Lee. Nanette, can you just raise your hand? Please go talk to her right now.
I promise you.
And she can go back to the office this afternoon and do the calculations based on your particular property and your pier and buoys. I do just want to note that the low water mark has been established in Lake Tahoe by the California Supreme Court. So that is a fixed low water mark.
It is the low water mark that has been defined. I heard this high water issue. And again, I mean, I'm not claiming to be versed as well as you folks are in this, okay? But finally, the last thing, maybe I'm a little bit more sensitive to it, is the snickering with regard to affordability of $375, okay? I know certain people that maybe in this room.
I'm going to stop you here, sir, for a second. The snickering, and you've now mentioned twice that we've ignored people. I think this commission has spent a lot of time working with the stakeholders in the area, and the staff has done an excellent job. And I have a problem with the characterizations of snickering and ignoring, because I think neither of those things have taken place, and that this commission has paid a great deal of attention to the people who've brought their concerns to us and heard them and directed staff to do yeoman's work to bring us to this point. So I just, do me a favor. I know you don't mean it in a mean way, because I can tell by your demeanor. Let's be careful about language, because I don't want people's feelings to get hurt.
All right. Well, let me just say that there is a perception of lakefront property being reserved for the ultra wealthy. I mean, realize Bill Gates may not characterize a lot of the people, but the fact of the matter is that our property, as well as our probably one of our closest friends, is a widow whose husband recently passed away. These are what we call split lakefronts, if you understand what I'm referring to. In other words, we've got essentially a high traffic, high speed road that separates the house from the water. Okay, so the parcel that includes the pier in both of these instances is separated. It's not like it's a serene lakefront property, okay? So the 375 in that context, you know, for particular people that have spent far, let me just say, far less than the average Sacramento home price, okay, within the last 22 years, okay? It is a significant amount of money when you're working on fixed incomes, okay? And I think that that is a factor that the perception is that you're dealing with mega millionaires, and it's not always the case. And I know that Ms. Evans related the story that the gal, and I don't know if you heard her at the last meeting, but you know, it's compelling anyway. But I appreciate the opportunity to speak, and thank you.
Thank you. Mr. LaBrie, Gilbert LaBrie, please.
Thank you. My name's Gilbert LaBrie. I'm a Delta stakeholder and a dock owner down in the Delta or in the waterways. It sounds like Lake Tahoe has been sufficiently represented in discussions with staff. I can tell you that I don't think we don't have an organization representing all of us, Sacramento River and other areas that have private docks that have been eligible for the free recreational pier permit. And I think that's unfortunate because there's probably some issues there that may come up that haven't been addressed. I did appear at one of the public workshops, presented a statement. I wasn't able to make the December meeting because of a conflict. I do represent some Delta Islands levees. I'm a levee engineer. I also process permits through the state lands. I raised some questions, I think some of which still are kind of unclear to me. We pay a fee to process our lease now. So I guess one of my early questions, and I don't still know, is the what's the annual rent going to be used for? Is the administrative fee going to be reduced so that in effect the rent is compensating for the administrative cost of administering that thing, or is this being added? And if it's being added, then how are we going to benefit in the waterway that we're leasing or the state lands that we're leasing? Is it going to go for rock on the levees that now comes up as part of the permit process?
On our time, sir, let Ms. Lucchese respond. Yeah.
So just to clarify on a couple of different cost issues, there is the cost to submit an application fee for the staff costs associated with processing that application and bringing it to the commission with a recommendation to enter into that lease. There's the administrative fee that is in the proposed regulations for that would be an additional fee for the management of that lease. However, that administrative fee is only limited to certain types of leases, including commercial and industrial uses. It is not applicable for those entities or individuals that have recreational piers. So there will not be an administrative fee charged for that. The administrative fee is something that we would want to include in our commercial or industrial leases, for example, to Chevron for a marine oil terminal where we have mitigation monitoring and ongoing staff costs associated with managing those lease terms. That's not applicable to those folks that have recreational piers in the Delta, Huntington Harbor, or Lake Tahoe. And finally, then there is the rent. As we've been talking about, that is based on a benchmark that's updated every 5 years for a particular location. We have a Sacramento Delta benchmark. And the rent proceeds that come in through our leases go directly into the general fund, with the exception of the Lake Tahoe lease revenues, rent payments due to a new law that was just recently effective January 1st of this year. Well, that will go into a separate fund for use on Lake Tahoe to improve the lake.
Okay, I understand. So the rent, so the annual rent is not going to offset the cost of renewing a lease?
No, sir.
When it comes up?
No.
It's going to the general fund?
The rental payments, yes, go to the general fund.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, the only other thing I wanted to mention is, and it's your, I did submit a comment with respect to, for the December meeting regarding that ordinary high water mark, mean high water mark issue. And so maybe that's something is you, if you're going to kind of do an iteration and look at that, because when you get down into the tide exchange area, I mean, the mean high water mark is something that's, it's out there.
Yes.
The ordinary high water mark is going to, it's a floating, it changes. Yeah. It's going to be different this year than it was last year.
Yes.
When you get down into that tidal range because of the, so you may need to have it two pieces in there to make it easier for those of us down in the Delta, at least to to relate with you when it comes to establishing where that line is, which is really pretty important when you get to. The one last I do want to ask, in terms of siphons and irrigation pipes, are they going to be subject to a fee at some point? They're agriculture. Where do they fit within
this thing? Yeah, if we have pipelines, irrigation types of facilities on our property, we will require a lease.
No, I know you require a lease. I guess my question is, because I've got some processing, are those people going to be subject to a rent?
Yes. Well, let me let Colin Connor answer this.
A section in the Public Resources Code 63. There's a section in the Public Resources Code 6327, which allows for basically no lease required from the commission for taking water out of the Sacramento River, the Delta area, mm-hmm. or you know, for certain beneficial type purposes. So we would have to evaluate anything that comes in to see how it's being used. So if that structure falls under the provisions of that code section, it would not require a lease from us. There are caveats with that. They do require certain permits from Corps of Engineers, DWR, things like that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your time. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Lean, Greg Lean.
Good morning, honorable members of the commission, distinguished staff. My name is Greg Lean. I've had my law office in Tahoe City for 30 plus years, and it's a pleasure to be able to speak to you this morning. I wanted to address kind of a follow-on issue to the one that we're talking about, mostly focused on fees. But there are a lot of changes in your administrative regulations, many of which were non-controversial, and many, frankly, that were just good improvements. Spoke to some problems that we'd had before with regard to, you know, what can you lease? And there was wording in the regulations, as you'll recall, about limited to the docking of boats and that kind of thing. Now we've opened it up because, of course, we know people use their piers for all kinds of things, general recreational use, swimming, sunbathing, and so on. So we can begin to be a little more rational about uses and so on. And I think that just highlights, by way of one example, the fact that these changes are going to have a follow-up, which is to revise your standard lease form. And I think we have an opportunity here, is what I want to point out, to come up with language that is fairer and more reflective of what your policies have been and should be going forward from this point. A lot of the testimony today continues to talk about this problem of a tale of two economies, tale of two mindsets. Of course, we don't all have rich folks out there. There are a lot of people that it truly is going to be a hardship for to have $375. I mean, you know, it really is. And there will be people for whom it's chump change. We can't address that. The other mindset kind of difference here is it's not just a tale of two economies, it's a tale of two mindsets, where many people would perceive that what they bought and paid for many, many decades ago, if they bought a property with a pier, was they bought their pier. And to, in effect, have to rent their own pier from someone else that they feel they bought and paid for, that mindset then faces your mindset, which is a little different, that, gee whiz, this is on state lands, it must be ours. You know, that's another mindset that we need to overcome. Or at least recognize that there's very different points of view going through here that lead to different things. Let me get down to just a couple of examples of areas where I think we could profit by taking the success of this process and going forward now. Let's look at how we negotiate over the standard lease language. One example is currently in Section 3, Paragraph 13, and I know a lot of your staff just, you know, go through these all the time, crank them out, and you've got a number of different versions. You tack on Section 3 to the end, you know, Section 2 is whatever you draft, and so on and so forth, and we go through this all the time. And, for example, in Paragraph 13, it says there's, at the end of the term of the lease, whatever improvements you had there cease to belong to you, and they now belong to the state, and the state can have you retrofit the property down to nothing if the state likes the idea of doing that, and you'll restore it. And not only that, Mr. Lessie, we're going to require you to give us some kind of quitclaim deed or something that gives up that pier that, again, in your mindset, you thought was yours, you thought you bought and paid for, you thought it's been in your family for generations, and you take care of it, and it's quite valuable. So most people, if they actually read the fine print, and I think most people don't, but when you do, you find some very disturbing language. And I would submit, since you haven't removed a pier from Lake Tahoe pursuant to that language, as long as I can remember, I don't think it's ever been done, we probably don't need that kind of draconian language. And it ought to be changed, not just from a perception point of view, but just a fairness point of view. Let's have language in there that's fair.
Let me stop you for 1 second, sir. Yeah. This is more comment to my two colleagues. I have actually had that issue raised from several other folks in addition to this gentleman. If both of you could read it before the next hearing, because I'm pretty confident we're going to have some folks coming before us with regard to that specific Section 3, Paragraph 13, and we're going to have to deal with that. I have read it and actually share some of your concerns with regard to that language. So
can staff get that to us?
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And kind of a second example, too, is how do we administer language? And we have a shorthand description for an issue that's come up repeatedly called the Vanderbeek. So we've had Vanderbeek 1, we've had Vanderbeek 2. Now we've got a Vanderbeek 3. I've represented all three of them, so I know this issue pretty well. I think we need to revisit the issue of how upland users are dealt with. In your regulations and the way this is tightened up, it's abundantly clear that people who have use rights in what they view to be a homeowner's pier can also be lessees and qualify to be on your lease. On Vanderbeek 2, I wanted to give you a quick update. You'll recall that many of you expressed sympathetic comments to my client's problem, which they were the upland users, the homeowners, and you issued a lease solely in the name of the lakefront owner. Now the lakefront owner has blocked off the pier to the homeowners, refuses to let them use the pier, and it just leads to problems. So, you know, some tweaking of the language here or some manner of addressing this issue would avoid a lot of ill feeling between homeowners igniting little range wars that never really needed to exist in the first place. I think the main point is let's get down to a process where we look at the standard lease language and begin to make that reflect the fairness and the duty of straightforwardness and fair dealing that we have. Since we're going to have some changes in language, I know you're talking about going and looking back at, you know, what we've recently approved, and I wondered if we could say, let's also look at what we could term the pipeline. There are a couple of leases that either have been already approved by the commission or are on the agenda for February 21st or in the process for soon thereafter. And maybe we can work in some of the language changes sooner than later and kind of expedite a process for this. So that concludes my comments. Any questions?
May I just speak to that last part? That is our intention to address, to implement these changes beginning today, should the commission approve the regulations for those that are already in the pipeline. The crux point is for those that have already been authorized by the commission, because we've already gone through the entire process. But for those that are pending with staff right now that have not yet gone to the commission, and even for those that are will be coming to the commission for your consideration in February, we will implement these regulations and the practices that I outlined in the beginning for that February meeting.
Okay. I have a comment and then a question, and this addresses Mr. Hooper's comments also. I think we've worked really hard over the time we've been working on this issue to deal with the fact that the commission recognizes that the range of incomes of people with properties on the lake is incredibly varied. That you go from Steve Wynn and Bill Gates down to retired school teachers and firefighters and things like that. I think we've gotten a long way there. My question to staff would be, and I guess maybe to council also, is there any way in the regulations we could implement some type of hardship exemption? And I don't know how one would define that, but for someone who truly is on a fixed income, retired fixed income, I'm wondering if there is any way. I don't think it would be a large group of people, but that some way they could prove up that the $377 fee truly is a hardship for them.
Chair, I think that we can look into that option. I don't think it's something that we could effectuate through our regulations. It would have to be legislatively statutory. Okay. And we have to look at the legal implications of that, from the constitutional prohibition on the gift of public funds and assets and other legal aspects of that. But we will certainly look into that.
Okay. Any other comments by which members? Then our last person who has submitted a request to speak, and I can't tell because it's just an initial, Mr. or Ms. Vargas. Not here. That being the case, is there anybody else who wishes to comment? Staff have anything they need to add? No. That being the case, Ms. Ortega.
If you're ready to entertain a motion.
I am ready to entertain a motion.
I want to thank everyone in the audience and the staff for what appears to be a Herculean effort to get to the place we are here today. I think that the proposal before us has come a long way to addressing a lot of the concerns that were raised, and so with that, I'm happy to make a motion to approve the regulations as recommended by staff.
Do I have a second?
You want to vote? You want me to vote?
Okay, I'll vote on this one. I would second the motion. And I would also like to ask the comment. I think staff has done an amazing job. I have been involved in state government for 27 years now, and there are not all that many circumstances where bureaucrats, and I mean that in a positive sense, and the public interact and come to a end product that is significantly better than what we started with. And I think the State Lands Commission staff has done a phenomenal job here. And I would also like to compliment all of you who have been involved in the affected community for the civility and the intelligence you've brought to this process. The letters I have read have been wonderfully informative. They helped me reach a better understanding of what the folks deal with in this issue, and I think everybody involved in this process, you guys could hold some kind of seminars for the folks in Washington and other places on how the public and the private sphere is supposed to interact to the benefit of both. With that, I would like to put it to a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
The regulations are adopted. Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Obviously, because of the rules, we were not able to vote, but this process started while actually I was over here and Gavin was the chair. And I do want to echo the comments of the two other commissioners and thank Jen specifically, who's worked with our office an awful lot and has been a good partner in this, and staff as well. And I also want to say to the folks who came in from the other affected communities, because you know this issue has been very hot, and we thought of, you know, we see it as a Tahoe issue because that's the folks who were here. But to the folks from the Delta who've come in and you know, I'm sure there's folks in Southern California who this affects who couldn't have been here. I just want to assure you that the attention that we paid and the work that we did with the affected stakeholders in Tahoe, should something come up that adversely affects you, I want you to know that it is this commissioner's intention to make sure that we pay the same exact amount of attention and that we work with you in the same way we did the Tahoe lessees. And that we understand your concerns, and you know, should something come up, you will get the same care and attention that we've given to the Tahoe landholders.
Thank you. Mr. Tegan. Ms. Lucchese, next order of business?
We move to public comment.
Is there anyone in the public, in the audience, who would like to offer a public comment on this or any other issue that is before us? No. Any of the commissioners have any comments or questions? With that, this concludes the open meeting. We'll now adjourn into closed session. Will the public please clear the room? And thank you all very much. Going to adjourn the closed session and come back into open session. If there aren't any public comments at this point in time, this special meeting of the State Lands Commission is hereby adjourned.